The next item on the agenda is actually the written reports from the HR Director, Ahmad Anderson, the Affiliates Director, Ursula Rudenberg, and Technical Director, John L. Mella. John is the only one here, and what I would like to do, actually, is to have him set up for Brian DeShazer, if it's not already done, and that we take the time to read those reports this evening. If there are questions for John, we can get back to do that tomorrow. And are we actually set up to go? And is Brian? Yes, Brian is here. Good.
Chairperson George.
Yes.
Will Ahmad and Ursula be arriving this weekend?
I don't think so. No.
Do we know why not?
Are we postponing these, or are they off the agenda?
Well, they're written reports, please, let me finish. May I finish? Am I not on? They're written reports, and my suggestion is that we postpone consideration of these until tomorrow. There is some time on the agenda if people want to bring up particular issues. Neither Ahmad nor Ursula will be here, but John is, and you could, if you have questions for him, you can do that. Otherwise... Yes.
Also move.
Is there any objection to doing that? No. Good. Brian. Brian DeShazer is the director. Is that your title?
Yes.
Of the Pacifica Archives, which I think probably need no introduction. Brian, you have a half an hour.
Thank you.
Yes. There's been a request made to extend the time for the person who just arrived. Is there any objection to doing that? Okay. Hearing no objection, please, you have 3 minutes.
I don't have to take my coat off. I can. You are
right.
So, that's right.
You don't have to tell us your name, but you can if you wish.
Okay. Vanessa Dixon. I'm a member of the community and a 30-year listener, approximately, of WPFW. And I was on the LSB for about 3 months in an intern position. So I was there just long enough to kind of get a better understanding of what's happening. Just wanted to express to you all a couple of concerns based on information that's come to me as a community member, an involved community member, but particularly interactions that I saw while I was on the LSB. And my primary concern is that of the interim general manager. And there are three different issues, which I'll address very, very briefly within the time. One is in terms of how the GM interacts with the LSB. And as far as I can tell, there's not good interaction. My understanding from various members of the LSB is that they try repeatedly to meet with or talk to or communicate somehow with the interim GM by email, by scheduling meetings, and there is just no return communication. The meetings don't happen. The communication doesn't happen. So that goes much more... It's a stylistic issue, but much more substantively, it really prevents the station and the LSB from operating as it should in collaboration with the GM. I've heard that on issues of the budget, on issues of you all coming to town for this meeting and making sure that you all had a good visit here, on various issues in which the GM just is the dictator rather than working with the LSB that does have a certain amount of authority. The LSB definitely has authority with regard to programming, and there is a particular program on, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jeanetta Rose Barris, who is a decidedly right-wing person with the spot on PFW. Now, that did happen before the interim GM came on board, but the LSB does have a certain amount of authority in that area, which the GM would appear to be blocking. And in my own concerns about other programming issues, a person that I know, Faye Williams, who had a show on the air, who was just unceremoniously removed, my involvement in that led me to believe and witness integrity issues on the part of the GM in terms of just out-and-out lies that were told. I have a minute left. Thank you very much. So just to bring this to your attention, you may or may not know that this is happening. You may or may not know that there are concerns about this. My hope is that PFW will remain true to the philosophy and the mission under which the network was started. There's a social justice philosophy, and that has a certain value and certain meaning, and I presume that that's not just rhetoric, and that the general manager will embody the philosophy of social justice and act in a way with meaning toward that end. So my hope is that the general manager will be interim and nothing more than interim, and that there will be a new general manager that is comes to the station in collaboration with the sitting LSB. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Alex?
I'd like to raise a point of order. Since the interim general manager has been personally attacked, I think he should be given an opportunity to say a few words in his defense, if he so chooses.
He has an hour coming up next to speak, so I...
Well, that's his report about the station. I'm talking about a response to the personal attacks against him.
I don't think it's in order. Yeah. Okay. What's next is Brian DeShazer, who we really would like to hear from. Not that we didn't want to hear from the other folks, but he's been in the wings for quite some time.
That's Brian? Quite all right. After 11 years at Pacifica, I'm very patient and leave my schedule open all day long for Pacifica, even when I'm scheduled at 9 a.m. It's all cool. All right, so thank you so much for allowing me to come to this board meeting here in Washington, D.C. from Los Angeles. You know, one of the things that I am cognizant of is the costs of the board meeting. So when I asked to come to this meeting, it was not only to present to you, which I haven't done in a few board meetings, and it is a new board, but also to meet with the grant officers of the organizations who have been so generous to support the Archives Preservation and Access Project. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of meeting with the National Endowment for the Arts grant officer, Mary Smith, who has been supporting us for the past 7 years, and I thanked her for the new NEA grant of $20,000, which will begin soon, actually just started. And thank you very much for the preservation and access of more recordings. Also wanted to thank her for the completion of the last NEA grant, and also for the encouragement that we, the Pacifica Archives and the Foundation, apply for the new round of National Endowment for the Arts grant, which is due this coming March. So if we, the organization, decide that that is a good thing to do, then you will see me and our Preservation and Access Coordinator, Addie Gevins from Berkeley, working on that application. I also met with the American Archives Pilot Project grant organization, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, yesterday. And the three grant officers, we finished a $100,000 grant, closed it yesterday, completed the report, and turned it in. Thank you very much. That grant project is very, very important, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But what it does is the first effort on a national basis that Congress, meaning the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Funding, has gone and done and has taken the initiative, thank you, that's the word I was looking for, to start the survey and start the work of creating a National American Archive for Public Broadcasting. From the 2005 testimony that I gave before the the Sound Preservation Board of the Library of Congress, they're the ones that took that message to Congress to say, we think this is a good thing to fund. And I was the only representative of community radio. Wow. So in terms of what my pride is in terms of this collection, what we've been able to do in the past 10 years, Addie Gibbons and the entire staff at Pacifica Radio Archives, is to raise the profile and the historic significance of the broadcasting history of Pacifica. This is a major deal. It's no longer a self-owned, company-owned collection. This is a collection that is now accessible and known by our country. It is now being invested to by our country. And it's time that you, this board, and this foundation decide to invest in this collection. So, with that being said, now that I said that, I know there's no money. So we'll get to that in a little bit. I'm not idealistic about it.
You know.
Right, right. So, you know, for the new board members, it is important to say what is the archives. And even as of yesterday, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting asked me, what is the Pacifica Radio Archives? It is the oldest and largest collection of public broadcasting in America. Radio started before the television. The duh. But we tend to forget that. New generations are going to forget that. So we have to remember to keep radio in the game of multimedia. And that's what my role is. And what the archives' role is, in terms of the foundation, is preserving that legacy, making it accessible to the public, but also serving the stations and the station listeners. You know, it was always our dream that the Pacifica programmers would be the first ones to ask for material to create new documentaries, use it in new reports, use it in the new evening news. It doesn't necessarily happen, but that's okay, because what the people who are accessing it are authors, scholars, documentarians, museums, exhibits, really exciting, creative ways that we've been able to make the materials accessible and utilized, even in choreography. The choreographer, Bill T. Jones, choreographed a piece to a Langston Hughes speech. So, you know, what's important, too, is the role of the rest of the foundation. What is your role as the governance? What is the station management role? What is the national office's role in terms of how it views and how it protects this archive? You know, unfortunately, because we're in the midst of the entire foundation's budget, that sort of gives us the hurdle and the barrier to actually try to cross over in terms of the constant funding that we need and to meet our needs. You know, the problems that you're going to have to keep in your mind is that we don't have enough staff. Even with the grants that we are getting, we are having to use outside consultants and outside professionals to do the small little bit of deliverables for the grant, but it does not give us the staff that we need internally to get the work done on every single tape on a daily basis regularity. That's what we're losing. We're losing a professional archivist. We don't have a professional cataloger. We don't have a professional IT person, and we don't have a professional person to work on our website. We're going to look at this website in a minute, and you'll see that it's not really that great. It's pretty. You know, actually, you can find some stuff, but dang, you know, sometimes I can't find the thing that I even posted myself. So, and as the grants happen, NEA number 3, NEA number 5, the Grammy Foundation number 4, all that material is posted on this website for the purpose of reporting back to the grant organization. But what we haven't done is aggregate all of that material, transcripts, audio, low-res, high-res, and put it into a single place that's easily found and easily accessible. And what we need is that team of professionals that can take this on as a project with a finite beginning and end of this is how we're going to post it, this is how we're presenting it. We also want to connect with the social networking. This past fund drive in November, which, again, I have to thank the archive staff for doing so much work in coming onto the radio station and producing from beginning to end the broadcast, the appeal, the pitch, the project, the program, and the actual product. Coming up with the ideas, putting it together, writing it, manufacturing it, duplicating it, labeling it, shipping and mailing it and packing it. We are a complete production company in the archives. And services to stations, we hope that the stations will utilize the materials that we've made accessible to them as well as to the public. This month, February, starting Monday. I'm also here to work with WPFW and will be pitching on the air and bringing Black History Month special premium gifts to the listeners of WPFW. Thank you.
Can I take this opportunity to ask? Sure, Mr. Chair.
Right. Actually, what you know, what's exciting too about the recent grant project with the American Archive. Actually, you know, let me just dive right into that too. The American Archive pilot project was. Is this going to be it? There we go. There it is. All right. So the American Archive goals was the what. Was to find out what approximate volume of public TV and radio content is in urgent need of archiving while considering preservation moving forward. The goal was, what is the current condition of the materials? What are the issues associated with rights management? What is the range and average costs of cataloging, restoring, digitizing, and making accessible old and new media? What resources and capabilities do participating stations have to archive their own programming? Not meaning the archives. Remember, the other participants are local community radio stations that do not have a Pacifica Radio Archives. They wanted to know what identifying other issues to consider moving forward, like everything that we have to communicate to them. And the ultimate goal of the American Archive is to preserve public broadcasting's historical and cultural content, establish standards and best practices for digitization and distributing content, and providing access to the content to educators, the general public, and other media makers. What's really exciting about that is the deliverables. You know, so usually we go into preservation and we get a CD that goes into the refrigerator forever. We get a CD that we can duplicate, and then we get maybe a MP3 file or a WAV file to play with. In this particular project, looking to the future of iPhones, distributing audio in different ways, we come up with low-res, high-res, super high-res CDs of an individual recording. So take, for instance, James Baldwin. We are now allowed to consider using an iPhone application or creating an iPhone application that is the Pacifica Radio Archives Black History Month iPhone application, where every single day of the month you could hit the button and it would give you a two-minute clip of black history from the archives. Being that it's in low resolution, we can deliver that like that. The prototype website that sort of displays all of this content for the American Archive is not yet completed to where I can show it to you. It's not yet been approved by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. But privately, you know, outside of public session, wink, wink, I'll be glad to give you a quick little tour. It's very, very impressive. And it really does show our collection in context with every other public broadcasting participant in the project. You know, our interview with James Baldwin next to a TV clip of the Little Rock Nine from whatever station it came from. So the point of me bringing that up is the grant organization received their deliverables and they did their prototype and it looks really great and it's going to be presented to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and Congress to get new funding to continue the grant project. But it's up to us now. I mean, I have the document that has all those little low-res and high-res and super-res files, but what are we going to do with it? What are you interested in letting me do with that material? Do we want to create an iPhone application that's a Pacific historic iPhone application? We can do it, but it's going to take that staff I talked about, that IT person, the web person, and some sort of, you know, the actual think tank of the vision of how do we get from point A to point Z when what we want to do is actually make it accessible in a lot of different ways. You know, some of the ways that we do make the materials accessible, which impressed the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is our From the Vault series, our weekly series that we've been producing for over 3.5 years. Mark Torres, myself, and frankly the entire staff at the Pacifica Archives always come up with ideas and subject matters to review. And if you look on the screen, just this week, we did find historic material on Haiti. As somebody mentioned in public comment, this organization has been covering progressive and international subject matters for so long. We were able to find a Noam Chomsky speech very early on about the history of Haiti, as well as 1975, somebody went to Haiti and recorded a voodoo ritual, which is, as far as radio goes, sounds incredible. So we're very proud that the From the Vault makes our materials even more accessible. I believe a few weeks ago we did a program called They Remember Dvorak. You wouldn't think that there would be much interest in that other than some classical people, but an actual descendant of Antonin Dvorak called us, who was doing the family genealogy. And this particular program is the only program that gives evidence of people who knew them. So there you go. Also recently, you'll see that on our From the Vault website, fromthevaultradio.org, that we are now streaming and podcasting. So you'll see that little listening bar there so people can actually listen to the program right away. When I say right away, I just meant not right away now, right away. Right. All right, so some of the other places that people can find material and where the way we've made them accessible is through academic projects. This past summer, as I reported in the last grant, that we had two interns from the University of Texas, Austin, and the New York University School of the Arts. Wait, that's not right. There's a long Library of Sciences department. But they came to us and did an LGD project. And with UC Berkeley, you'll see over there on the screen that this is the chronological history of the LGBT movement from the 1920s till now. And as we sort of go down, you'll see when we get into the 60s, when we actually start things, there's actually video papers, related papers. And here is the 1958 first public broadcast of the homosexual in our society. You'll see that this is description of KPFA's program. There's a listen to it button, and of course the attribution, and there's a hot link to the Pacifica Radio Archive site. So academia is on board. This is the third project we've done with UC Berkeley Moffitt Library, the first one being the Cartop Rally, the free speech movement. Then we did the Black Panther Party movement, and now the LGBT project. We also have collaborated with archive.org. You know, one of the things that I've had a vision of is the historic folio guides, that we really do have the first one from 1949, the first 6 months of KPFA, and most of the folios from every single station for that entire period, a few missing here and there. But what's exciting is that this particular one is the 10th anniversary issue of KPFK, Give the Gang Our Best. And as you'll see, we can flip through and see that there are essays, there is information, there's Eddie Albert. This is actually a people paid ads. People donated money to get an ad to wish KPFK happy birthday. This is Bob Darin. And there is Robert Wise Foundation. Some interesting stuff. So this is the actual story of Pacifica here in visual. There's Malvina Reynolds donating a song to KPFK. So there's a little few places where the archives is seen and is accessible from different points. Whoosh. So let me show you real quick about what I meant about our website really. Our website really does need to be revamped a bit. Did I completely lose it? Looks like. Okay. All right, so while I'm reconnecting, do we want to stop and just take a question or two? See if anybody's...
I think that's a good idea.
Because if anybody's sleeping, I'm going to catch you.
I just wanted to...
I will call you out.
To reflect a little bit... Am I talking? Am I being heard? Okay. Reflect a little bit about last time I saw Bryant speak before the board. He was very passionate.
Did I cry?
He did. / demanding for financial assistance for the archive. And the reason why was because he knew the value and of the content in that archive. We in America often honor and value our heroes by their monetary wealth. But when I listened to that that cassette you gave us, those tapes, and found myself not being able to go on to the next CD because I wanted to repeatedly hear the first one I started with, I understood what you were going after and why you valued that. And as it said, that he who writes history, it becomes his story. And when I look at the work that you're doing, I understand that you are preserving our story. And when I say our, I'm talking about the Native Americans. I'm talking about the blacks. I'm talking about the activists. I'm talking about the people who gave their lives. You're preserving that, and I think that you are definitely an American hero.
Thank you. I'm also very humble. I'm not ready for that quite yet. Thank you. You know, there's still 40,000 tapes to preserve.
Bill?
Tens of thousands to still preserve.
Yeah, I'd also like to thank Brian and all the people from the archives. And I think you really are setting a good example for the rest of us in looking beyond just using radio, but how do we reach out to the masses and both preserving what we already have, our history, as well as, you know, providing it in a form that's accessible. And as you say, we'd like to make it more accessible to the public. That's what we all need to be doing and looking for ways like this of connecting more people through the web and also other ways. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Sean?
Hi, Brian. I share KPFK with you. And, you know, whenever I go up those stairs, I see all those old tape machines. And, you know, I always wonder, because, you know, mediums melt, how are we doing in preserving all those tapes and things, and what kind of timeline are we on before we lose some of those things?
Right. Well, we're at that point now. I mean, the history, the reel-to-reel tape usually lasts 50 to 70 years, depending upon how well you take care of it. We're doing, in terms of conservation, we're doing okay, but really the tape is in the old age home. The tapes, if you think about that, you know, assisted living, old age home, hospice, we're almost at the hospice stage with a lot of the tape. Because in the 90s, there was a grant from the NEH or the NEA, that transferred a big chunk, onto new tape stock, which was worse than the old tape stock. So we're definitely on an uphill battle. But that's the thing, is we just don't have enough money. If we had millions, we would be able to at least arrest that,
right,
transfer it, digitize it, and then start the game from there, all the cataloging, but that just doesn't happen. So what we've had to do is take on the strategy of focusing grant funding, the arts and literature, NEA, get the visionary writers, get the visionary speakers, get the visionary, and the most significant, historically significant materials. So when we go into the selection process, we go through a lot of vetting of criteria of, just because it's James Baldwin doesn't mean everything. We actually have to look deeper. We have to look deeper into, not now, we have to look even beyond that in terms of what is actually historically significant on the local level. Four people in a room in 1963 talking about Dr. King's assassination, whether they were visionary thinkers or authors or poets or whatever, at this point doesn't matter. Actually, more important that they were real people talking about the real event. And that's what's actually more historically significant to historians through the American Archive, is that there is a historian on board who does look at our collection and say what's really important is not only that you welcome the Paul Robesons and the Baldwins and the Stokely Carmichaels and the Angela Davises and the June Jordans, but that you also welcomed every person that wanted to be on the air. That's a little bit high-minded, but but, you know, it really is like it's the grassroots. That's the bottom line. Yeah. That it is the grassroots history of our country that is will otherwise be unknown unless we do something about it.
Afia?
It is on a level true in the rawest sense. That it's a collection of the sounds of these people and these events. Excuse me. There is an other aspect of it which I find quite troublesome, and I've raised this with you before, and that is how you choose to put it together, to edit it, to present it, because while it is in its rawest sense, just data or just sound. On another level, it is the history of a people. It is the frame of reference of that people. And it is imperative that greater effort is made to ensure the participation of those people in the treatment and the processing of that material. And I challenge you to do that.
Okay, I would like to talk to you more about what you mean by that in terms of in the selection process of what we're preserving or how we're producing material for the Pacifica Network, or I actually am not quite sure.
Well, for instance, when the last time that you and I had this exchange, you were putting together, I believe, what became called From Black Power to Obama.
Redefining Black Power in the Age of Obama, which is a book project we're working on with City Lights.
Yes. Right, exactly. In addition to my offering to work with you on that project, the hostile response that I received and the presumption in choosing who's an expert on it, who ought to be interviewed, those are things that are interpretations, they're decisions that are interpretations that decide what the value and the story of the people is. And while I agree with Rico that you are doing a wonderful work, there is some other stuff that goes with it that makes it even better. And a part of that is manifesting the respect for the history that sound represents by engaging the people whose exercise of their human right of self-determination is reflected in those sounds.
Yes, I appreciate that. And I believe that we actually did address your issue with the author of the book, whose responsibility is to do that, not my job as the series editor. I brought the author and the project to Pacifica. It's the author's job to make the selection and the editor at City Lights to make the selection of who's in the book and who's in the roundtables. I believe that you mentioned SNCC, is that right?
Yeah.
As one of the we did have a SNCC leader in one of the roundtables here in WPFW with Gloria Lionot being the interviewer for over an hour.
And
it was part of the broadcast and will be part of the book.
That's a perfect example of my point. The email that I got from you said that I should be contacted, but that I should have no editorial input. Now, I don't have to have editorial input. There were other people, in addition to myself, who were on the Atlanta Project, which actually drafted the position papers, which provided the theoretical underpinnings for the modern-day call for Black Power as presented by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and popularized by Kwame Ture, formerly known as Stokely Carmichael. So as far as I'm personally concerned, I am offended, and I feel greatly disrespected. But even more important than that is the history of Black people and what that meant, what Black Power meant to us, means to us, and to have someone outside of our community presume to be able to talk about that without at least the representative that we choose is an insult.
We're actually at time for this section. You had some more that you wanted to say.
No, I think, you know what, on that note, I'm fine to finish.
We can extend time if you like.
No, actually, I do want to respond. You know, I heard that you were offended that I said I didn't want you to have editorial oversight. That meant as a board member, not as a community member of your history with the movement. So as board members, with the contract with City Lights, a publisher, board members are not allowed to have editorial oversight, and that's what I was trying to communicate to you at the board meeting.
No, that's not what the email said.
I'm gonna put an end to this.
Thank you, George.
It can be done in private if necessary. Because we have other board business to do. Andrea.
I want to thank you so much for the college, the school project where the archives went out, because it really enlighten a lot of young people's backgrounds with history and information. And I think I owe you some more money on that project. And so I promise to get you some more money because some of the colleges that in the South from the civil rights movement really appreciated getting the archives, and in particular in areas where there are no libraries, no information or anything like that. And through that innovative approach to linking the archives to areas that crossed a lot of cultures, populations, genders, age groups, really made them feel happy, and it's still going on, right?
That particular yes.
Well, I congratulate you on thinking creatively, including people of color, to receive the archives that they didn't have access to. And so I really congratulate you on that, and I will get that check to you.
Thank you.
It's in the mail. It's in the mail.
Yes, Lamont Yeeke.
Yeah.
Yes, both Lamont Yeeke was a professor of history at Cal State LA who helped compile some of the civil rights movement collections, and also knew Jose Maldonado, who's a professor of Latino Chicano history. I cannot remember the name of the college, but he's working on compiling our Hispanic collection, which is also in the new volume of Campus Campaign, but actually using it in this coming semester will be the first time that three classes of Chicana history will have access as required listening of our collection for that.
Rico, I have
Lamont Yeeke is a gentleman of color.
Who else would like to ask questions? Just put your hand up if you'd like to ask questions. Okay, one, two, three. I'll entertain it. Yes, I did. I entertain a motion to extend time for 7 minutes. Any objection? Okay. Now, yes. I think I heard Summer first.
Brian, I just wanted to thank you. Since we share the same building in Los Angeles, I know how tirelessly you and the rest of the staff and the archives work at events, getting this stuff out into the community, 11 o'clock at night, you're there with the archives as well as being in the office. I mean, I think you're really tireless documenting the stuff and archiving things that are going on now, the MacArthur Park, situation, all sorts of things. So, I mean, it's not just archiving the past, you're also involved with archiving the present, and I think what you're doing is invaluable. And you're obviously doing really well getting grants so we can preserve this stuff. So just really keep up the good work. It's excellent. Thank you.
Kenny?
Also, Brian, I'd like to commend you for the work that you're doing with the archives. And because I have a massive tape collection of my own of live performances and things that I do in the community, video on VHS and just bringing it up to date to digital, to YouTube and all of that, I know the process. And when you go to look at them tapes, you'd be like, wow, not today. Oh, but then you have to put your heart and mind and soul into it to say, okay, I'm going to tackle this particular project, and that's off the books. Who owns the rights to all of the Pacifica archives?
Boy, is that a big question. The American Archive Pilot Project, it was asking that big question. What do you know about all of your stuff? And the amount of material that needs to be cleared for rights is 100%. We do own a lot of it. We don't own a lot of it. We don't know if somebody recorded something off of a television and then put it into a tape and we think we own it. We don't know if somebody recorded something at UC Berkeley that was sponsored by UC Berkeley and UC Berkeley owns it, but we just have it. I mean, that is the deal. So this particular finite collection of African American Civil Rights Movement recordings from the Bay Area Station from 1950 to 1970, there's 335 recordings. Every single one of them, we had a copyright researcher go through. Now, in 4 months, it was impossible to get to the point of do we own this one or don't, and what can we do with it? But we were able to sort of go through a few filters to say, working with the American Archive and their attorney, copyright specialist, to say, all right, so everybody, what are we going to do with this whole public broadcasting archive? How can we access it, and what can we as a country do with it, and what can people do to license materials? So it's a big question that hasn't been answered yet. But we can do little by little. In fact, in the yesterday when I was meeting with one of the grant officers for the upcoming NEA grant application, we were advised to start working on copyright research as services to the field and of community radio. In other words, if we can answer a few questions on a few tapes, it'll start informing the job of coming to the conclusion of what kind of rights do we have on bigger scales. So that's what we're doing. In fact, in this project, we found a few pieces that we had to go to UC Santa Barbara, the Southern Christian Leadership Program in Atlanta, that you know, we didn't know if we had it or they had it or if they even knew that we had it. So we're getting there, but it's a very tall mountain.
Yeah, thank you, Brian, for the report. And just want to I probably have Brian say a little bit more about the campus campaign, because in the fundraiser this year for archives, it's like I've heard Brian do his presentation on the campus campaign, and it sounded very good and like something that would raise money. But you really have to get into it to understand how it relates, and I think Andrew was touching on this, how it relates so much for all of us. All of us went to some school, unless you were homeschooled, and then you can send it to your mom at home or whatever. But you can. But what this will do, if you commit and to this campus campaign, I mean, you can send this to your high school, your elementary school, the college, or whatever, and it's in your name, and then you also get a copy. And this is really, really powerful. You know, this is something that all schools, regardless of where you're from, particularly us in the South, who are from down south opposed to being up south, that this is desperately needed. And I think one of the people had told me, well, a couple of things in terms of how they've been able to use some of these tapes and basically substitute and have it available. So, you know, but I'm asking all of you, everyone who's on the stream, to please sign up for this, get that, donate it to your schools, get with Brian and with Mariana, and to get this package. It's critical for all of us and for all children. And can I tell just a quick little story? I've told a lot of people about it. I'll tell it on Sunday.
Okay, good.
What is it?
Alberto?
A quick question, Brian, on this. Sorry. A quick question, Brian, on this. Again, congratulations on your effort. On this idea that you're in the process of putting together a Chicano program, mm-hmm. with Dr. Maldonado. Mm-hmm. I have this question, and I'd like to ask it. Is the bulk of the information and the programming and the recordings and the stories that are available, are they mostly California? Is there anything from Texas?
No,
actually,
the Houston station, there's a very small collection. So most of the Latino, Hispanic, Chicana recordings do originate from Los Angeles and the Bay Area.
And again, let me ask you, and most of the stories, the interviews, the pláticas that are in the recordings, are they mostly from events and people in the California area?
Yes,
okay.
I believe so. And actually, those are really good questions, because when we get to a scholar like Jose Maldonado,
yes.
who actually is really working with every, and also Edgar Toledo and Mark Torres, let me just say that they spearheaded this effort in working with that genre and finding Jose Maldonado to work with, to really look at what we have and what it means and really what scope it has, in terms of it's California only or Northern California, Southern California, and where else it comes from. Because, of course, there's a lot of Latino community in the New York area. So we're still interested in finding materials from there, too. But it really takes those kind of eyes to look for it.
Thank you. I was just wondering.
Ears,
I have that question. How much of that is available?
Not much yet, because we still need
yet.
We're identifying it now, but it's the next step is getting it digitized.
Sean.
Yeah, real quick question. We all know that the archives are priceless, But if you had to put a monetary value on it, what are we talking about? Do you have any idea?
One of the hardest things that to answer is how much does it cost to preserve a tape? It kind of depends upon what you call preservation. Like, is it just a CD, or is it CD cataloging, accessibility, putting it in different places? It depends upon that. But we did find through the American Archive Pilot Project, with all of the catalogs and the archivists and the consultants and myself and the archive staff and the vendor who did the digitization and the person who listened to it to quality control check it, it can cost up to $300 per hour of tape. We have 50,000 tapes in the archive.
Right.
The value of a single tape, if just preserving it, is $350. The value to history?
Right.
All right, so the priceless part is you do know about the Rosa Parks tape, right? So we have the first interview with Rosa Parks after her release from jail, 1956. We preserved it in the first NEA grant. It now lives inside the bus at the museum in Dearborn, Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan, so that people who are filed through the actual bus get to hear her voice instead of some innocuous narrator. It also lives in there's an academic book being published by the university, I'm not going to get this right, a university, but they're writing the academic book on the Montgomery bus boycott, and this particular interview was never part of history before. Now it's part of the historic record. That's the value.
And in her own words.
Thank you for the opportunity for letting me come and present to you and to represent the Pacifica Archives for the Foundation.
And thank you for the work you do.